It may let them die in millions, as if it mattered nothing. But value is in quality, not quantity. A pea may be as round as the world, but as far as roundness is concerned, neither is better than the other. And man is, in himself, a little universe. The ordering of his mind and body is as complex as the ordering of the stars. Can we say, then, that the governing of a man's universe is less important because it is different in size? Tao and Wu Wei. The essence of Lao Tzu's philosophy is the difficult art of getting out of one's own way, of learning how to act without forcing conclusions, of living in skillful harmony with the processes of nature instead of trying to push them around. For Lao Tzu's Taoism is the philosophical equivalent of jiu-jitsu or judo, which means the way of gentleness. Its basis is the principle of Tao, which may be translated the way of nature. But in the Chinese language, the word which we render as nature has a special meaning not to be found in its English equivalent. Translated literally, it means self-so. For to the Chinese, nature is what works and moves by itself without having to be shoved around, wound up, or controlled by conscious effort. Your heart beats self-so. And, if you would give it half a chance, your mind can function self-so. Though most of us are much too afraid of ourselves to try the experiment. Other than this, Lao Tzu didn't actually say very much more about the meaning of Tao. The way of nature, the way of happening self-so, or, if you like, the very process of life, was something which he was much too wise to define. For trying to say anything definite about the Tao is like trying to eat your mouth. You can't get outside it to chew it. To put it the other way round, anything you can chew is not your mouth. So too, anything you can define or imagine, anything you can understand or desire, is not the Tao. We can't know it. We can't feel or sense it, for the very simple reason that it's the whole substance of knowing, feeling, and sensing, of living and existing. It's too close to be seen and too obvious to be noticed or understood. If I may say something which sounds utterly ridiculous, it's more us than we are ourselves. More you than you, more I than me. Putting it more clearly, perhaps, it's the you that grows your nervous system rather than the you that uses the nerves to decide, think, and act. That will do for the moment, even though it's not quite right. If I try to make it clearer, it will just get more and more complicated. Now, I believe that almost all human beings make some sort of distinction between the self that wills and acts and the subconscious self that manages our hearts and glands and nerves. Such words as self-control and self-consciousness suggest this divide of our being into two parts, knower and known, thinker and thoughts. To the degree that we feel this division, we are always trying to control and understand and dominate our subconscious self with our conscious and willful self. But in Lao Tzu's philosophy, this is quite literally to be all balled up, to be in a desperate and utterly frustrating condition of self-strangulation, falling over one's own feet and perpetually getting in one's own way, which is, of course, not Tao, the way of nature. This is why our principal problem in life is ourselves. Why we are so tormented with anxiety about self-preservation and self-control. Why we are so mixed up that we have to make laws to regulate our behavior, employ police to keep ourselves in order, and equip armies with explosives to prevent us from blowing ourselves up. In the more intimate sphere of personal life, the problem is the pain of trying to avoid suffering and the fear of trying not to be afraid. Obviously, anyone who realizes the enormity and absurdity of this predicament wants to get out of it, wants to get unballed up, to get back to the uninvolved sanity of the Tao. But this is so much more easily done than said that it's very difficult indeed. For, according to Lao Tzu, the way back or forward to harmony with the Tao is, in the profoundest and most radical sense, to do nothing at all. But I said that this was so much more easily done than said, because the moment we begin to talk or think about it, it becomes immensely difficult to understand, to clear from innumerable misinterpretations. In the Chinese language, this special kind of doing nothing is called wu wei, literally non-doing or non-striving. This term is perhaps a bit awkward because the Chinese wei, to do, sounds rather like the English way. So to avoid unnecessary confusion in a confusing subject, I shall pronounce wu wei in the Japanese style. Mui. When Lao Tzu said that mui, doing nothing, was the secret of harmony with the Tao, he really meant it. But what he meant by it must be distinguished very carefully from two other courses, which sound quite different from one another, though they are really the same. The first course I will call the way of deliberate imitation. This is to suppose that we actually know what the sane and natural way of living is, to embody it in laws and principles, techniques and ideals, and then try, by a deliberate effort of imitation, to follow them. This leads to all the contradictions with which we are so familiar, the contradiction of man bawling himself out, as well as up, for not doing what he tells himself to do. The second, and seemingly opposed course, I will call the way of deliberate relaxation, the way of to hell with it all. This is to try not to control oneself, to attempt to relax one's mind and let it think whatever it wants, to set out to accept one's self as it is without making any effort to change it. This leads to a vast, sloppy, disorganized mess, or to a kind of compulsive stillness, or sometimes an equally compulsive psychological diarrhea. Both of these courses are far short of the real mui, of profound and radical non-doing. What brings them to the same thing is that, in their different ways, the two courses had a result in mind. They consisted equally in something done or not done to get to a goal. The goal in question was some sort of image, some mental picture, some vague feeling of an ideal, of a state of accord with the Tao, of harmony, with the way of nature. But it was precisely in relation to such notions and ideals that Lao Tzu said, "Get rid of knowledge, eject wisdom, and the people will be benefited 100-fold." He was talking about supposed knowledge of what the ideal way of life is, As I said at the beginning, there is simply no way of knowing what the Tao is. If we cannot possibly define the Tao, we certainly cannot define what it is to be in harmony with the Tao. We have simply no idea of what the goal ought to be. If then we act or refrain from action with a result in mind, the result is not the Tao. We can say then that Muyi is not seeking for any result. Of course, this doesn't mean that a Taoist comes to the table without expecting dinner or gets on a bus to go nowhere special. I'm talking of results in the moral and spiritual sphere, such things as goodness, peace of mind, sanity, happiness, personality, courage, and so forth. Well then, is it possible for me to stop seeking for these results? Surely the very question implies that I have still a result in mind, even if this is the state of not seeking results. It seems, therefore, that I am helpless, that I am simply unable to think or act without some result in mind. It makes no difference whether I do or don't do. I am still compulsively, helplessly seeking a result. So I find myself in a teleological trap. I must purpose. I might almost say I am purpose. Now this is an immensely important discovery, for it means that I have found out what my ego, actually is, a result-seeking mechanism. Such a mechanism is rather a useful gadget when the results in question are things like food or shelter for the organism. But when the results which the mechanism seeks are not external objects, but states of itself, such as happiness, the mechanism is all clutched up. It is trying to lift itself up by its own bootstraps. It is working purposefully, as it must, but to no purpose. It is looking for results in terms of itself. It wants to get results from the process of looking for results. This is a hopelessly and wildly fouled up feedback mechanism. There is, however, just this one possibility. It can realize the whole round circuit of the trap in which it lies. It can see the entire futility and self-contradiction of its position. And it can see that it can do nothing whatsoever to get itself out of it. And this realization of I can do nothing is precisely Muyi. One has mysteriously succeeded in doing nothing. At this moment, there is a sudden shift in the center of gravity of one's whole personality. You simply find yourself outside the trap, outside the result-seeking mechanism, which now appears as a sort of object which has purposes all to no purpose. You see yourself as a purpose-seeking creature, but realize that there is no purpose for the existence of such a creature. In relation to everything except your own preservation, you are marvelously futile. Your aim is to preserve and perpetuate yourself, but in the larger context of the universe, there is no reason, no purpose for this aim. Formerly, this would have depressed you. Now, it doesn't bother you at all. For, as I said, the center of gravity has shifted, and you no longer find yourself identified with this absurd mechanism of purposeless purpose. In Lao Tzu's own words, the universe is everlasting. The reason that the universe is everlasting is that it does not live for itself. Therefore, it lasts. Therefore, the sage puts himself behind and finds himself in front, regards his person as outside himself, and his person is preserved. Is it not because he does not live for himself that he realizes himself? In other words, when the shift has taken place, when he finds himself outside of himself, outside of the teleological trap, the trap unwinds, the result-seeking mechanism straightens out and no longer seeks itself or states of itself. But remember, all of this happens mu-we. Another good translation of this might be know-how, as distinct from somehow. There is no way, no method, no technique which you or I can use to come into accord with the Tao, the way of nature, because every how, every method, implies a goal. And we cannot make the Tao a goal any more than we can aim an arrow at itself. If we once get into the tangled state of the arrow which is trying to shoot itself, the self trying to change itself, we can't do anything to stop it. So long as we think or feel that perhaps we can stop it, that there is some way, violent or subtle, difficult or easy, to make ourselves unselfish, the contradiction will continue or get worse. We have to see that there is no way. But in the state where we have realized that there is no way to be found, no result to be gained, the vicious circle breaks. Ouroboros, the snake eating its tail, has become conscious all the way round and knows at last that that tail is the other end of its head. We find ourselves in these circles because of ignorance, because of unconsciousness of the nature of our minds, of our thought processes, of ourselves. And the antidote to ignorance is not action, but knowledge. Not what to do, but what we know. Yet here again, the necessary knowledge does not seem, on the surface, to be anything very promising or hopeful. For the only knowledge in this sphere which can be talked about is negative knowledge. Knowledge of the trap, of our helpless imprisonment in useless seeking. Positive knowledge of the Tao, of God, of the eternal reality, is a matter of immediate, momentary experience. It can never be put into words, and any attempt to do so converts it into just another aspect of the trap. I realize that we do not like to be told that we are in a trap and that there is nothing we can do to get out of it. Still less do we like to realize it as a vivid experience. But there is no other way of release. A proverb says that man's extremity is God's opportunity. We cannot find release until we have known the real extremity of our situation and see that all striving for spiritual ideals is completely futile, since the very seeking thrusts them away. Yet why should it surprise us? Hasn't it been said again and again that we must die to come to life? That heaven is always on the other side of the valley of the shadow of death, the valley of which physical death is merely a symbol, where the helpless corpse, bound hand and foot in its winding sheet, is just a figure of the death in which we live so long as we mistake it for life? Where do we go from here? We do not. We come to an end. But this is the end of the night. Lightness of touch. Chesterton once said that because they take themselves lightly, angels can fly. One sees so many faces dulled by a seriousness which,